淘宝，我们一年比一年更厉害，是翻一倍。
No one knew anything yet, but one of the greatest disasters was about to strike Alibaba. It's November 10, 2012, and the excitement that has been building up to Singles Day is incredible. Singles Day, celebrated on the 11th of November, also known as 11/11, is the biggest single sales bonanza in China. Similar to Cyber Monday and Black Friday, Singles Day is a time for unrestrained consumerism, which was commercialized by the Alibaba team. The days leading up to the event would likely consist of a whole series of exciting TV and digital adverts with posters on every street. To prepare for the launch of Tmall, Alibaba's premium B2C e-commerce platform attracted more than 10,000 merchants, from electrical appliances to clothing, and invited over 60,000 brands to participate in the event. The sheer variety had Chinese consumers hooked, and at midnight of 11/11, a fury of Chinese consumers logged onto the platform. Very quickly, traffic soared on Tmall as 10 million users, nearly three times the traffic of last year, came online. Inside Alibaba's headquarters, employees maintained a live tally of transactions, turning the shopping experience into a real-time spectacle that inspired consumers to dig deeper into their wallets. Within the first couple of hours, transactions had already crossed the 3 billion yuan mark. 6 hours later, it doubled. Then another 5 hours saw it shoot up to 10 billion. To an individual seller, it translates to overwhelming volumes being sold. Everywhere, merchants would report that in the first hour, a warehouse volume of products were pushed out. Over 2,000 cleaning kits, 50,000 packs of diapers, 20,000 mops, 30,000 cans of milk powder were sold by assorted merchants. Everyone was happy, except for some of the usual complaints. Websites going down, online banking lagging out, and products going out of stock. But unbeknownst to everyone, the massive pressure from e-commerce orders would cause the supply chain pipelines in 2012 to implode. Logistics planning softwares would crash as express delivery partners worked round the clock, both understaffed and under-equipped to handle the volume. All around China, people began complaining, lashing out against Alibaba and their delivery partners, as a 2 to 4 day delivery turned into a week, then a fortnight, before arriving a month later than expected. This disaster would sear deep into the leaders of Alibaba. Most of all, Jack Ma, who would toss and turn on his bed until he called a special meeting. By his lakeside garden, he gathered his executive team, leaders within the logistics company, and people within real estate to discuss a solution. Perhaps enchanted by the significance of the location, being the birthplace of where Alibaba and Taobao were launched, the team's discussion evolved rapidly before it dawned on them that they would need to launch a third company. One that would complete what observers called the Iron Triangle of the Alibaba Group. Together, they would birth Cainiao, a logistics company that's valued at over 20 billion US dollars. From 1UP Media, this is Empires, episode 5 of a 5-part series, Dragon in the Ocean. The ascent of Alibaba to its pinnacle can be traced back to its formidable hold in logistics, managed by a separate entity known as Cainiao. Loosely translated to rookie, Cainiao is a platform that connects delivery networks through physical distribution and data connectivity. Cainiao functions something like if Amazon spun out its entire supply chain division, then replaced its own delivery drivers and vehicles with a marketplace platform for any delivery partner to join. The benefit for the delivery partner is a chance to be picked for fulfillment among the thousands of merchants, but more importantly, to do so efficiently by borrowing both Alibaba's data and warehouses for better optimization. The birth of the rookie marked the last stage of Alibaba's complete control over the e-commerce system, also known as the Iron Triangle. This trifecta, e-commerce, e-payments, and logistics, enabled Alibaba to oversee the full customer journey, from order placement to delivery. As we delve into the origin of Cainiao, it's important not to forget the journey Alibaba has undergone, and the shadow of Amazon growing ever larger in the background. Starting off as a B2B platform, Alibaba was on a rocket ship to global growth before the dot-com crash in 2001 forced it to focus on domestic e-commerce demand. A year later, their hold over China's e-commerce was threatened when eBay entered the Chinese market. In retaliation, Alibaba introduced Taobao, a C2C platform modeled after a traditional Chinese bazaar. Taobao offered distinct features like a chat messenger for a real-life haggling experience and a reliable online payment system, which struck a chord with local consumers. Taobao's approach starkly contrasted with eBay, which failed to recognize the necessity of localizing their platform for China and instead pursued international appeal. Their error was amplified when they moved their systems to America, losing their nimbleness in the Chinese market. Despite their missteps, eBay maintained their operations, heavily funded by vast reserves. A significant shift occurred in 2005 when Yahoo made a massive $1 billion investment in Alibaba, a final deciding punch. By 2006, eBay had retreated from the Chinese market, but celebrations were premature for the Alibaba team. In the background, Amazon had quietly purchased Joyo.com, amassing a 15% stake in the total B2C market. To add to this, Taobao's consistent policy of free merchant support had unwittingly opened the floodgates for counterfeit sellers, damaging its reputation. To tackle this issue, Alibaba launched Tmall, a high-end B2C platform, to challenge both Amazon and the counterfeit vendors. But it would prove difficult, as Amazon was catching on to their advantage. As the sun was setting in Seattle in the late 2000s, a cluster of Amazon executives gathered in a conference room, their minds focused on China. The purpose of their meeting was simple yet profound: crafting an approach to capture the Chinese market. China would be our seventh foray into foreign markets. After successfully establishing online platforms in the USA, Canada, France, Germany, Japan, and the UK, an analyst might have shared, highlighting the growth of Amazon. Prompted by curiosity, someone asked, "How's Japan?" "Using books as our bridge into Japan has proven quite successful," replied the analyst. Yet he sensed the underlying purpose of the query. It wasn't about Japan, but rather a probe into how Asian markets responded to an American e-commerce giant. To respond more precisely, the analyst continued, Asians view Amazon as credible and a barrier against counterfeits. This could bode well for our venture in China. The executives nodded in agreement. But there was one crucial decision still to be made. Whether to delegate authority to China or centralize decision-making in Seattle. Amazon's expertise in managing a B2C business was evident in the growth trajectory in Europe and Japan. So, logically, there should be no impediments to a similar triumph in China. We've successfully stormed into foreign markets before. We kept the Amazon brand when we acquired Joyo.com for a reason. Let's make sure big decisions come through us, and we'll find solutions together. It's time to stir the waters in China. This strategic choice on company structure had the potential to reverberate throughout the business world, reminiscent of eBay's defeat to Alibaba due to a lack of local decision-making. By keeping decision-making in Seattle, approvals were destined to lag behind by 12 hours due to the time difference. However, Amazon had one clear advantage: their reputation for trustworthy products, already proven in America and Japan. In the early 2000s, products made in China suffered from a perception of inferior quality, perceived as being manufactured through less refined processes and having fewer quality checks. This negative perception affected all Chinese companies, including Alibaba, Taobao, and Tmall, which were riddled with counterfeit products. With industry experts estimating that up to 50% of products in certain categories were counterfeit, the trustworthiness of the Amazon brand became an even greater asset. It could not only leverage its American reputation, but also offer cross-border selling of quality Japanese products via its Amazon Japan division. Japanese goods were viewed not only as high quality, but superior, thanks to meticulous Japanese craftsmanship. As Amazon continued to take advantage of its perception, it would gain an advantage when one of the greatest disasters struck Taobao. As the year 2009 was drawing to a close, Savio Kwan, the president of Alibaba, found himself troubled.
What's the root of this surge in fraud claims?
He wondered, leafing through a stack of customer complaints handed to him by his team.
Let's narrow this down. There has to be a pattern somewhere,
he suggested. Diving into the data, the team uncovered an alarming trend. A majority of the suppliers tied to the complaints were gold suppliers, a status granted only to verified, legitimate merchants. This raised serious concerns.
Keep an eye on these suspects,
Savio Kwan might have instructed. As weeks turned into months, a staggering count of 1,219 fraudulent gold suppliers surfaced, followed by another 1,107. As the team strived to unravel the issue, they found that about 100 Alibaba employees had granted approval to these dubious merchants, resulting in a colossal $2 million in fraudulent transactions. It dawned on Savio that these internal employees had aided the verification of these merchants, sharing in the illicit profits. Presented with these facts, Jack Ma and his team decided on a courageous course of action: public admission and apology. The aftermath was swift. Alibaba's shares plunged 8%, and CEO David Wei and COO Elvis Lee stepped down. Despite both of them being unaware of the fraud, their resignation sent a strong message, as Alibaba initiated an extensive internal cleanup. With Alibaba in turmoil, it seemed like a golden opportunity for Amazon to make a move. But its centralized structure and lack of on-the-ground decision-making made the company rigid and slow to adapt. In all fairness, Amazon had a long-term strategy focusing on building warehouses to cater to durable consumer needs, which encapsulated the holy trinity of retail: price, selection, and convenience. By mastering these three elements, they expected to replicate their previous victories. Their misstep, however, lay in assuming the Chinese market mirrored the West. Having previously locked horns with the retail giant Walmart in America, well known for its consistent low prices and deals, Amazon believed it had a firm grasp of the extremes of price, selection, and convenience. However, they soon discovered that their signature offering, free delivery through their Prime membership, was already a standard service with both Tmall and JD.com. JD.com, a titan in the Chinese market deserving of its own narrative, is widely recognized today as China's authentic Amazon. They hold their own inventory, maintain their own warehouses, and invest in transportation partnerships. But before they came to mirror Amazon's model, they were already outpacing the American company by offering services at a fraction of the cost, nearly 5 times cheaper. Amazon, much like its predecessor eBay, had to face a harsh lesson. The notion of everyday low prices in China operated on a whole other dimension. As they struggled to adjust to this stark reality, their foothold in the market started to slip away. In the early 2010s, Amazon faced a downturn that appeared increasingly precipitous. One of Amazon's cornerstone strategies in the West was to prioritize convenience, a durable consumer need that made it a household name. Back in 2005, when Amazon rolled out Prime, its 2-day fulfillment policy was wholly supported by UPS. Amazon's role was mainly to strategically position warehouses across the United States. However, the China situation was more complicated. The company was grappling with a lack of both warehouses and delivery drivers. The latter issue was especially tough since inventory was already managed by individual sellers, whose volumes were generally lower than those of their Western counterparts. This means that while both warehousing for inventory and delivery drivers were the problem, local merchants were already trying to solve for inventory. The issue that Amazon truly needed to solve was in delivery drivers. An insight lost on Amazon as they continued constructing more warehouses. In the meantime, Alibaba pivoted towards developing partnerships with delivery drivers, offering support to logistics companies to bolster their delivery volume. By the mid-2010s, despite Amazon boasting 15 different warehouses, equivalent to 150 football fields in total area, delivery remained a challenge. They wouldn't launch their own driver program until 2016, trailing their competitors significantly. Amazon's plight was exacerbated by JD.com, which, aside from establishing its own partner programs, also outpaced Amazon in building warehouses and recruiting delivery drivers, thereby ensuring superior convenience. As JD.com led in convenience and Alibaba won on pricing, Amazon could only compete by offering a diverse range of products, leveraging its suppliers from Japan and other international markets. In another time, Amazon's wide variety might have come in useful, but China's emerging digital middle class preferred to find the most convenient and cheapest deal possible, which placed Amazon at a distinct disadvantage. Eventually, the competition would go on overdrive when Singles Day erupted within China, growing to become the biggest one-day sales event, attracting celebrities like Daniel Craig, David Beckham, and Katy Perry. Originating as a university joke, Singles Day on November 11 became a counterculture movement, an occasion for singles to challenge societal norms, or perhaps even find love. Sales on Singles Day started to eclipse those of both Black Friday and Cyber Monday combined, an opportunity Amazon missed as it did not participate in the event. In 2012, it would become a double-edged sword when Singles Day almost quadrupled the year before and collapsed Alibaba's delivery partnership strategy, forcing the company to adapt. This evolution would take Alibaba from a crocodile in the Yangtze River to become a dragon in the ocean. Several months after wrestling with the fallout from Singles Day, Alibaba's team came to the realization that they could no longer afford to sideline supply chain and logistics issues. So on April 1, 2013, adhering to Alibaba's tradition, a dedicated team was gathered at the same lakeside house that saw the birth of both Alibaba and Taobao. Locking themselves in for 2 months, they worked towards defining an impossible problem. On one hand, they needed to revolutionize logistics. On another, they didn't want to own their own delivery fleet. The discussions became prolonged and intense, and the only point they could agree upon initially was the project's name, Cainiao, suggested by none other than Jack Ma himself. Colloquially, Cainiao translates to rookie, a term Jack Ma selected to downplay their status and openly admit that they were novices in the field of logistics. The name turned out to be apt, as Cainiao began making some rather perplexing decisions. While they had expressed no intention of owning assets, they started purchasing land, presumably as a contingency measure. This move, however, didn't sit well with the Tonglu Gang. The Tonglu Gang was a consortium of delivery entrepreneurs consisting of four major companies: STO, YTO, ZTO, and Yunda. They were responsible for the fulfillment of about half of the market's delivery packages. Through increasingly deeper partnerships, Alibaba and the gang had formed a strong working relationship. All the while, Alibaba representatives had reassured the entrepreneurs that Alibaba would never steal their business. But the sudden land acquisition sent shockwaves through the consortium. With their partners suspicious, Cainiao had to quickly resolve its existential crisis, or risk anarchy. That's where Wan Lin entered the picture. There's a certain irony in the fact that Wan Lin, a former Amazon employee, would spearhead the launch of Cainiao and consequently hammer the final nail in Amazon's presence in China. Not much is known of Wan Lin's full story, as he maintains a low profile in the media and among friends. Growing up, he devoted his time to his studies, ultimately earning a doctorate from the University of Texas, Austin. There, he was acquainted with Amazon and joined their ranks. Over the next 9 years, he would become the director of global logistics strategy and internalized many principles.
Let's raise the bar and exceed expectations. Amazon taught me about customer-centric culture and capability. Culture without capability is just a slogan on the wall.
His experience in Amazon was profound. Most of all, the scale where he was involved in the operational delivery of 10 million packages by Amazon every day. Despite his busy schedule, Wan Lin kept a close eye on Amazon's maneuverings in China, which likely piqued his curiosity about the scale of Alibaba's operations. When he discovered that Alibaba processed approximately 100 million packages on Singles Day alone, the prospect of joining Alibaba became irresistible. In 2014, Wan Lin made the leap, joining Cainiao as vice president. One of his earliest assignments was to oversee the acquisition of one of Amazon's advanced warehouses in Shanghai, a task he accomplished with apparent ease. Yet his most significant contribution was likely his role in helping the Cainiao leadership define their ambitions. Each year, the complaints flooding in on Singles Day made it clear that Cainiao's partners required more support. Still, they didn't entirely comprehend the nature of the problem. Moreover, the lack of communication between partners made it impossible to optimize overall traffic. Given these challenges and Alibaba's competencies, the team hit upon an idea. Alibaba and Taobao had already established themselves as platforms where parties could interact. So why not take this idea and apply it to Cainiao? Perhaps they could be a similar platform for suppliers, but supercharged with their own in-house data. Allowing data optimization via their own transactions was smart, because all of Alibaba's e-commerce platforms were the most dominant. This meant Alibaba's data was a good estimate of the market data, which enabled them to optimize delivery on a market level. Now, instead of challenging the Tonglu Gang, Cainiao reinvented itself as a partner offering the kind of technical optimization the consortium had never had before. Then Cainiao started owning warehouses, but the intent was not to monopolize distribution. Rather, they aimed to make distribution more efficient without saddling a single distributor with the burden of maintaining a warehouse. The initial results were nothing short of astounding. Using historical sales data, Cainiao could predict regional sales trends and anticipate future delivery hotspots. This foresight allowed them to pre-stock warehouses and schedule delivery support in advance. While distributors still needed to expand their fleets as needed, this approach significantly boosted operational efficiency. The proof was in the pudding. On Singles Day 2015, less than 2% of shipments of major appliances, such as refrigerators, arrived late or were damaged when handled by Cainiao's partners. Today, Cainiao's sorting centers are a global presence, partnering with delivery services in over 60 countries who utilize their data optimization support. Cainiao's success catapulted Alibaba to heights few competitors could hope to reach, especially Amazon. By 2016, Amazon's share of the B2C market had dwindled to a mere 1%. In their defense, Amazon did attempt to fight back by offering features and bundles comparable to their rivals. But by the time they had acclimated to the local market, local players such as Alibaba had transformed into an integrated network that was impenetrable. With partnerships among key advertisers, the Alipay-Alibaba platforms and delivery partnerships became one closed-loop system that dominated the industry. On July 18, 2019, Amazon officially announced their withdrawal from China, their market share having dropped to a measly 0.6%. Meanwhile, Tmall commanded a 62% share, and JD.com held 25% of the market. Today, Alibaba continues to uphold its Iron Triangle strategy, simultaneously expanding its influence across various sectors. One of its most ambitious ventures is the Damo Academy. Damo standing for Discovery, Adventure, Momentum, and Outlook. The Academy is perceived as a powerhouse for research, bringing together some of China's brightest minds, from scientists and researchers to innovators. It's seen as a catalyst for technological revolution that holds the potential to reshape not only China, but the entire world. Alibaba's transformative impact on China's tech landscape is undeniable. However, it did not do so alone. Rising beside it was Tencent, a formidable media adversary that controls the largest messenger in the world, owns a music app with more subscribers than Spotify, and possesses almost all of your favorite games, including League of Legends, Clash of Clans, and Fortnite. Together, fueled by the billion-strong internet users in China, these two giants have become the kingmakers of the tech industry, amassing incredible wealth and wielding it to fund a plethora of startups. During the height of this venture capital frenzy, a new Chinese startup valued over $1 billion was created every 4 days, which quickly saturated their domestic market. Still hungry for more, the gaze of these two kingmakers shifted overseas, particularly to Southeast Asia. In 2014, VNG, a Vietnamese gaming company, benefited from a significant Chinese investment, evolving them into the Tencent of Vietnam. In the ensuing years, VNG would not only outcompete titans like Facebook, but also dramatically alter the lives of over 100 million Vietnamese people. From 1UP Media, this is Empires, episode 5 of a 5-part series, Dragon in the Ocean. In the next episode, we interview someone close to the industry to learn more about Alibaba as China rapidly evolves. And in our next series, we explore VNG, Vietnam's version of Tencent, which outgrew Facebook to become the dominant messenger in Vietnam. Empires is a 1UP Media original, produced and edited by Guang Jin. Audio experience by Ethan Sam and narrated by Louise Cruz. A quick word on our reenactments and dramatizations. While we can't know exactly what they say, think, or feel at the moment, it is all based on research. Thank you for listening.